We're working through Lent and thinking about the various freedoms that ought to be available to anyone just because of who they are, a human being. And we've thought about freedom from indignity, freedom from slavery, freedom from poverty. And today we come to think about freedom from conformity, freedom from conformity. And of course, none of us likes to admit it, but the truth is, we are all under pressure to conform, to fit into the mold, to reflect the pattern, to be consistent in ourselves and amongst others. If we fail to do so, we are regarded as antisocial, almost anarchic, viewed with suspicion. It wasn't that long ago that if you were a man coming to this church and you weren't wearing a tie, you would be strangely out of place. You would be thought of as not conforming to the pattern that was required of you. You would be expected to come to church wearing a suit, collar, and tie. And ladies, you're not exempt either. You would be expected to have a hat and your best outfit. You would be expected to come in your Sunday best. Now, without looking in any particular direction round the church, with a few very honourable exceptions, I wouldn't like to think you're in the best of anything. But does it matter? Did you listen any more keenly when you were dressed in a suit? Did you pay any more attention when you were dressed up to the nines? I don't think so. So don't worry. I'm not going to castigate you for your appearance. Although old habits die hard, I can never imagine myself coming to church on a Sunday without a tie on. That may say more about me than you. May say more about my generation. But there's pressure to conform, and almost without realizing it, there are times we impose it upon ourselves. Ironically, we are a free church. The free churches exist because we chose not to conform. We said to the established church of the day, no, we're not going to be like you. We're not going to accept the rules and regulations you wish to impose upon us. We're not going to have ourselves tied to the state. We're not going to allow the government to rule over us and all of that. We are going to separate ourselves out from you. We're not going to conform to you. We're going to dissent from the very way you are as church. We are non-conformist, separatist, non-conformist dissenters. Our forebears fought hard that we might enjoy the same privileges as the established church within the wider life of society, and some paid with their lives in order that we might have such freedom. Our argument is that the church does not exist as an institution apart from the people. The church only exists insofar as it is a gathering together of believers. So you don't join the church. You don't come to church. When you gather here Sunday by Sunday, we become church. Every Sunday, we are different because not all of us are here every week. The dynamic is different. What we share and do is different, because we make church of ourselves as we gather. But when Paul wrote his letter to the Romans and talked about not being conformed to the world, of course, he wasn't talking about differences within the church. The church was in its embryonic form. There weren't denominations. There weren't traditions. There weren't factions. So Paul's not saying, don't conform to them over there, be like us over here. Paul was saying a rather more profound truth. He was saying, don't conform to the world in which the church is emerging. Don't fall into the trap of becoming as the world is. don't conform to the institutional structure that was imperial Rome. The church had to resist the temptation to see itself as an empire. Rather, it was to see itself as a commonwealth. Resist the temptation to become an empire. Hold true to the belief that we are made to be a commonwealth. The writer of the book of the Revelation declares defiantly, and at a time of extreme persecution for the church, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our God and of his Christ. Tragically, 3 centuries after Paul had written his letter to the Romans, the Emperor Constantine absorbed Christianity into the empire, a process with which, for short-sighted advantage, the church acquiesced. In effect, conceding that the kingdom of God and of his Christ was to become as kingdoms of this world. The challenge that Paul set before the first century church remains a challenge for the 21st century church. Not to conform, not to compromise, not to be seduced by worldly ways. We are in the world, we are not of the world. We are called to be such and must remain so. But what does it mean not to conform, even as far as the world is concerned? If we're not careful, it can become a trap of our own making. So someone wrote this, and the language is used in the context in which it was written. The simplistic way of not conforming is to see what is in style in our culture and then do the opposite. So if short hair is in the vogue, the non-conformist wears long hair. See? My effort to not conform. All of you with your short haircuts, I'm letting it grow. If going to the movies is popular, then Christians avoid movies as worldly. The extreme case of this may be seen in groups that refuse to wear badges or to refuse to use electricity, because such things too are worldly. A superficial style of nonconformity is the classic Pharisaical trap. We become as bad as they do. The kingdom of God is not about badges, movies, or dancing. The concern of God is not focused on what we eat or what we drink. The call of nonconformity is a call to a deeper level of righteousness that goes beyond externals. When piety is defined exclusively in terms of externals, the whole point of the apostles' teaching has been lost. We have failed to hear Jesus' words that it is not what goes into a person's mouth that defiles them, but what comes out of that mouth. The kingdom of God, we still wish to make a matter of eating and drinking. We've caused so much trouble for so many people by saying no to their yes, answering every question in the negative rather than having a positive response. We failed to appreciate that an attitude of life is the best way to counter the excesses of living. It is not enough to say no if you don't have a yes to go alongside it. Hence Paul's appeal to balance our necessary nonconformity to the things of this world by ensuring that under God we submit ourselves to the transforming or renewing of our minds. Don't be conformed to this world, but make sure that your mind is transformed in the ways of God. It's not enough to say no until you have a yes to go alongside it. Jesus told that very strange parable about the house that was swept clean. Get the devil out. Great. Left the house empty. Before you knew it, there were 7 more devils back in, and life was just much worse. It's so easy to sweep the house of the devil and then leave it empty. We have to provide a yes to balance the no. So don't conform to this world, but see that your mind is transformed Be prepared to see the world as God sees the world. I have a feeling that if I was to ask, is there anyone here who thinks the earth is flat? No one would put their hand up. No. Thank goodness for that. But nearly every geography textbook will tell you that it is. You open a geography textbook and you have a picture of the world. It's flat. And it's in a rectangle. The world is a rectangular flat space. No, it's not. It's round and it's three-dimensional. Geographers used to use a perspective called Mercator's perspective, which distorted the world, gave great prominence to what they believed was at the center, Europe. Britain was very big in a Mercator's projection of the world. More modern books use Peter's projection, very different sense of the world. Britain has shrunk down an awful lot. And Africa has grown immensely. A more proper, proportionate understanding of the way the world is. But still flat and still a rectangle. We should all buy globes and see the world as God sees it. Those marvelous words from the astronaut who went to the moon, looking back at the earth. The heavens declare the glory of God, declare his handiwork before us. Seeing it as God sees it from beyond where we are. And this is a powerful metaphor for describing the relative failure of the church to transform the world in accordance with God's purpose. We are worlds apart because while we've given our hearts to Jesus, we stubbornly refuse to submit our minds to his kingly rule. We really do want the best of both worlds. But actually, there is only one world. There is no world of the heart distinct from the world of the mind. You can't anti-intellectualize religion and expect to get away with it. King Canute, his lesson ripples down the century. You can't take thinking out of the church and imagine that's a good thing. A truly good person will speak truth, act with truth, and stand for truth. A truly good person is not afraid to think from the heart. Think from the heart. A worldview that is constructed solely in terms of the inevitability of progress. That's the world in which we live, the world which we're called not to conform to. The inevitability of progress, accomplished by intellectual prowess, materialistic motivation, mechanistic application, financial gain, political advantage, personal ambition, collective self-interest. That's the wider world of which we are a part, to which we are called not to conform. And we can say no to all of that. But what is the yes that we would set alongside it? The poet and the artist, whoever sharpens our perception, invariably are thought to be antisocial, rarely described as well-adjusted. They cannot go along with currents and trends. A strange bond often exists between antisocial types in their power to see environments as they really are. This need to interface and to confront with a certain antisocial power is manifest in the famous story The Emperor's New Clothes. And we all know the story. Which one of us has the courage to say, he's not wearing anything? No. The instinct is to go along with what others claim to see, even when it isn't there to be seen. The church is required to be anti-social for the sake of the society, which otherwise is crumbling around it. Not to conform to antisocial behavior just for the sake of it. Never confuse nonconformity with eccentricity. Sometimes we do that. But the gospel dares us to be different because to be different is to be what we needed to be. If we're not careful, we will allow the institutions we have built up around us to strangle the very life out of us. Historically, we've described the church as an army marching in step. All of us marching in step together. You can't afford to get out of step. What if we thought of it more as a dance? An opportunity to give expression to what we believe in the freedom of the surroundings in which we find ourselves, that we can dance. And dance in a way that's fun, not regimented. Not formation dancing, but dancing for its own sake. Jesus invites us to a dance, but we've turned it into a march of soldiers, always checking to see if we're doing it right and are in step and in line with others. We know a dance would be much more fun, but we believe we have to go through hell to get to heaven, so we keep marching. The time for marching's over. Too many people are marching in our world. Too many armies are invading the battlefields of life. It's not needed anymore. What's needed are people with the courage to dance, and in so doing, confront the conformity of today in a way that would otherwise transform that world to which we belong.